Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 2, Remembrance of Lord Krishna, Text Number 26. Tato Nanda Brajam Ittaha. Pitra Kamshad Vibhibhyata. Ekadasha Samastatra. Gudharchi Sabalovasat.
Gudharchi Sabalovasat.
Tato.
Gudharchi.
Thereafter.
Nanda
Brajam.
Cow
pastures of Nanda Maharaj.
Ittaha.
Being brought up. Pitra. By his father. Kamsat. From Kamsa. Vibhibhyata, being afraid of. Ekadasha, 11. Samaha, years. Tatra, therein. Gudha archihi, covered fire. Sabalaha, with Baladev. Avasat, resided. Thereafter, his father, being afraid of Kamsa, brought him to the cow pastures of Maharaj Nanda, and there he lived for 11 years like a covered flame with his elder brother Baladev. Purport. There was no necessity of the Lord's being dispatched to the house of Nanda Maharaj. Out of fear of Kamsa's determination to kill him as soon as he appeared. It is the business of the Asuras to try to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or to prove by all means that there is no God, or that Krishna is an ordinary human being and not God. Lord Krishna is not affected by such determination of men of Kamsa's class, but in order to play the role of a child, he agreed to be carried by his father to the cow pastures of Nanda Maharaj, because Vasudeva was afraid of Kamsa. Nanda Maharaj was due to receive him as his child, and Yashoda Mai was also to enjoy the childhood pastimes of the Lord. And therefore, to fulfill everyone's desire, he was carried from Mathura to Vrindavan just after his appearance in the prison house of Kamsa. He lived there for 11 years. And completed all his fascinating pastimes of childhood, boyhood, and adolescence with his elder brother, Lord Baladev, his first expansion. Vasudeva's thought of protecting Krishna from the wrath of Kamsa is part of a transcendental relationship. The Lord enjoys more when someone takes him as his subordinate son, who needs the protection of a father, than he does when someone accepts him as the Supreme Lord. He is the father of everyone, and he protects everyone. But when his devotee takes it for granted that the Lord is to be protected by the devotee's care, it is a transcendental joy for the Lord. Thus, when Vasudeva, out of fear of Kamsa, carried him to Vrindavan, the Lord enjoyed it. Otherwise, he had no fear from Kamsa or anyone else. Om Jnana Timirandasya Yananjana Salakaya Chachurun Militam Jena Tasmahe Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahiyam Dadati Svapadankikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Nangayate Gedim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. So, if Krishna is the Ishvaraha Parama, the supreme controller, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. He has a form of eternality, knowledge and bliss. He is the source of everything, an Adya, Adya Govinda. But he himself has no beginning. Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. Why does he need protection? Well, the answer is he doesn't need protection. From anyone or anything. But he likes to reciprocate with the mood of his devotees. The example we gave the other day is of the actor on the stage who plays a variety of roles. He's a good actor, can perform in a drama according to the setting of the drama, according to the scene. He plays the part. The actor remains himself. He's just pretending that he's a character in the play. He always maintains his individuality. But according to the scene or the setting of the drama, he plays a particular part. So similarly also, Krishna is himself the original, the Adipurusham. But according to the setting or the scene, often led by his devotees. You know, it's described in the Krishna book how before Krishna's appearance, then the various demigods were summoned by the Lord and instructed, go and take birth in the various locations, the land of Braj and Mathura and Dwarka and other locations, to set the scene for the Lord's appearance. Because he has a purpose. The first purpose is to protect or to please the devotees, Piritranaya Sadunam, Vinashaya Chaduskritam, to destroy the Dushkrita, the miscreants. So he has a purpose. But the main purpose is to engage in this reciprocation with the devotees according to the mood of the devotees and how they want to interact with him. So, one of the purposes is to establish religious principles, dharma samsthapanataya. And so in that sense, he gives instructions to Arjuna, instructions to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita, and other instructions also. Also instruct, you know, his activities demonstrate dharma or religiosity or his interactions with the devotees demonstrate or illustrate the height of devotional service, or the depth of, you know, the depths of devotion, especially in the displays of Krishna and his pastimes, the intimacy and the affection that is exchanged between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan is considered to be the most or the deepest, the sweetest, the most intimate set of interactions and exchanges between the Lord and his devotees. So in that sense, religiosity is established in the character and behavior of the various devotees, especially the gopis and the gopas of Vrindavan. The Vrindavan Leela is the most intimate and affectionate display of rasa between Krishna and his devotees. So he establishes religious principles. He kills the demons, as Prabhupada says here. Demons have a duty, right? They have a responsibility, and as part of Krishna's plan. What does Prabhupada say here? It is the business of the asuras to try to kill the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's their job. Or to prove by all means that there is no God. Right? Just like, I didn't read the article yet, but I'm going to have a look at it. The Archbishop of the Church of England announced this week that he's not sure whether God exists or not. In fact, he thinks that he doesn't exist. Huh? That's a problem for the church. Their leader doesn't think that God exists. Oh, you might think such a thing, but you don't say it. If you want to keep your job, you would think, right? So this is there are those who propagate, a philosophy or an understanding that's contrary to the principles of devotion and to appreciating just how God exists. It's very difficult, actually. You know, we don't have a problem. But I remember when I first met the devotees and started reading the books, and I thought, this is a bit presumptuous, isn't it? These people think that they know what God looks like, what he does, where he lives. What his name is. Because Prabhupada says that. We know his name. We know his address. You know, we've got his number. We know how to connect. Right? We just treat that as an everyday, you know, common occurrence, common activity, common behavior is to basically connect with God. But in a modern setting, where one can easily be influenced by this is the power of association, practically speaking. We live in a society where people want to degrade a proper understanding of God and the devotee's relationship with him. Right? This is the power of bad association. Whereas, you know, Krishna, when he appears, he makes sure that all of the devotees are there beforehand, so there's no lack of good association. In fact, it's the superlative type of, you know, they're the residents of Vrindavan, the intimate associates of Krishna, even those who are not so intimately connected to Krishna, who only have a short exchange with him. You know, like the lady selling the fruit. It was just a short exchange with the Lord. And yet within those exchanges, there's a wealth of meaning and a wealth of understanding and a very high level of devotion. Krishna offered just a few grains of rice to the, you know, just imitating as a young, very young child, imitating the training of the elders, and the fruit lady was spontaneously inspired to, you know, because she's a devotee. She gave him fruits without any consideration of, you know, exchange, if you like. It was an offering of love, and Krishna reciprocated with her, even though he's just a little baby, practically speaking. So in these very, you know, even in these, you know, there's the very intimate exchanges of some duration and of some, apparently some substance, if you like. But then we see that same substance of bhakti in the behavior of even just the ordinary fruit seller, or in the wives of the brahmanas. So this is, this is establishing religious principles through the exchanges of love and devotion, and in the meantime, killing a few demons. Like the Prabhupada would say, you know, before lunchtime, Krishna's already killed, you know, a dozen demons in his pastimes in the forest. And we see from that, especially, you know, Krishna's not in need of protection. Krishna's not in need of protection. In fact, he's protecting everyone, as Prabhupada mentions here. Especially, you know, the childhood pastimes. Killing the demons. The demons attacked and Krishna easily defeated them in a display of his strength and prowess. But then we see here that Vasudev, despite his being aware that his son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, he's displayed his four-armed form, he's shown him that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when the Lord, at his request, just manifest as a child, then that mood of service to Krishna overrode his knowledge of the fact that he was the Supreme Lord Vishnu. And so out of his affection and love for Krishna in the form of a baby, which covered his, as is mentioned here, Gudharachi, covered fire. When Putana came to poison Krishna, then he's described like a fire, embers of a fire covered by ash. Right? Embers of a fire covered by ash. So, you know, it looks like the fire is out. No potency, right? But if you step on it, you'll get burnt. What was the other description? What was the other description of Krishna? Embers, a fire covered by ash. What was the other description? Anybody know? Remember? Huh? A mirror covered by dust. That's a different analogy. Different pastime. A sword covered by the scabbard. Right? Sword covered by its sheath. Sheath. Yeah. Sharp and dangerous. Right? So, you know, he appears as a little baby. But Krishna remains fully potent, you know, as a child, as a grown up, as a youth. He's not limited by his form, right? This is one of the mysteries of God. And it's a mystery that people have a difficulty coping with, because when we conceive of form, then we think of the limited material form. And so when Krishna appears in what looks like a limited form, we think, oh, he's just like us. Or even, you know, there's a philosophy. God has no limitations, therefore you can't limit him with a form. Right? This is an argument. Especially, you know, a form like that of the deity. It's a limitation. But the argument is, well, if you say that God can't have a form, you're limiting him also. Right? If he's unlimited, you can't say that he can't have a form. So being God, he can both be unlimited and limited at the same time. Right? So within his form, the presentation of Krishna's different forms is not to be understood as a limitation, because within that form there is unlimited potencies. Angani yasya sakalendriya britti manti. Right? Each of the senses can perform the function of all of the other senses. Right? We can't do that. He can eat with his eyes or his ears, right? When he hears the offering of the... When the offering is made and we chant the mantras, then he's eating with his eyes and his ears. Not limited. And so similarly also, he appears as a little baby, but he's not limited by that, by being a baby. He's still unlimitedly powerful. So when Putana comes to try and kill him, then he's able to suck out her life airs, life breath. So he resides in Vrindavan, and his potencies are hidden. He remains there like a covered fire. What's for 11 years? He lived for 11 years like a covered flame. Of course, in one sense, he wasn't covered. His potency weren't covered because he was killing so many demons. Actually, but you know. The materialist is not able to appreciate and see Krishna as he is. So therefore they have a doubt. Does God exist? Or when he's presented with a name and with a form, then it is incomprehensible to them. You know, they doubt. But for those who are engaged in the process of devotional service, they have no doubts, they have no fears, they have no inhibitions when it comes to engaging in their relationship. And Krishna appreciates that. He reciprocates with that. So even though Vasudev theoretically should know that he's Lord Vishnu and he doesn't need any protection, he's not subject to any danger, he's not in danger, still because he's overcome or influenced, and Krishna also influenced by the unlimited potency of the yoga maya, or the lila shakti of the Lord. Vasudev, because he's the father, he can't help but want to protect his son. He's not thinking, oh, he's a supreme personality of Godhead, he can look after himself. But Lord, because of his affection for the Lord, the Lord appears, he's the supreme personality of Godhead, but he appears as a baby, helpless, to reciprocate with the feelings of affection, love and affection, that are showered upon him by his so-called father. The supreme personality of God, it is eternal. And so in one sense, he doesn't die and he's not born. But in order to display all of these loving exchanges, in order to establish the religious principles, in order to kill the demons, and in order to reciprocate the love and affection of his devotees, he appears in these, like I said, the actor appears as a particular character in a play to set the mood, to help others ultimately appreciate the love and devotion, the bhakti of the residents of Vrindavan. So there's that exchange. Krishna reciprocates with the devotees. He doesn't need protection, but he accepts the service of his mother and father in that mood, in that vatsalya rasa, that parental affection. And he enjoys that more, being dependent upon his devotee, than being, you know, the supreme personality of Godhead where everybody's asking him for protection. Right? Something goes wrong and what do we say? Oh my God. Right? You know, help me. Fix it up. But in this case, Krishna is, he's not being asked for anything by his devotee. Rather, the devotee, quotation the other day, the residents of Vrindavan aren't praying to God, they're praying for God. They want him to be protected. Whereas most people are praying to God, give me this, give me that, give me the other thing. Right? Different relationship. So, the presence of the demons is to facilitate this exchange, actually. Right, like Prabhupada says, they have a duty to perform. Even in the pastimes of Krishna, they provide the dynamic within which the residents of Vrindavan can share, and here in this case, Vasudev can reciprocate with Krishna without the tension, you know, without the threat of interference by the demons. Then some of these affectionate exchanges wouldn't exist, right? Wouldn't exist. So Kamsa needs to be there to inspire Vasudev in his devotion, in his devotional service. And that devotional service is to remove Krishna from the prison house and take him to Vrindavan so that he'll be protected by the residents of Vrindavan here. Nanda Brajam, the cow pastures of Nanda Maharaj. So as Prabhupada says, Krishna he's not afraid. He's not scared. But he reciprocates with Vasudev and his affection for him and his fear of Kamsa. In order to reciprocate that mood of dependence upon his devotee. You know, even here Krishna reciprocates in the same way by appearing in the form of the deity. And so we then get the opportunity to look after the Lord. Right? We get an opportunity to reciprocate that same exchange. He's the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he agrees to appear in the form of the deity. You know, the atheists or the materialists, they'll say, how can this be God? This is just matter. But the devotees recognize and appreciate that the Lord appears in order to reciprocate with his devotees. And so he can, and he's the source of everything. He's the source of everything material. So ultimately the material is coming from the spiritual. So he can appear within what seems to be, appears as a material form and endows it with spiritual potency so that when we're rendering service, we're able to reciprocate the same reciprocation that Vasudev is having with Krishna in these pastimes. We can also experience that same rasa in looking after the deity. Sri Vigrahara Dhana Nityanana Sringara Tanmandira Marjanada, is that right? Yeah. This is one of the tests of a guru, Prabhupada says, right? What's the first test of a guru? Samsara davanala lida loka. The first test. His instructions should relieve us from material distress. Right? Second item is he or she likes to chant Hare Krishna. Sankirtan. And third, they worship the deity. Fourth, what's the fourth one? What do they do? Honor prasadam. Distribute prasadam. You can see this in Prabhupada's activities. We can test whether he's, or any guru for that matter, we can test. So this exchange of love and affection between the devotees and the deity are an opportunity for us to look after Krishna. We feed him, we dress him, we put him to rest, we chant his glories. In that way, we develop our relationship with the deity. It's not a mundane, material, limited form, but rather the Lord agrees to. You know, if you say that he can't have form, you're limiting him. He must be able to have form, and so therefore he appears in a form within which he can then reciprocate this love and affection. And he appears to be then looking looked after by his devotees, and he likes that. He likes to be looked after by the devotees. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He doesn't need to be looked after by anyone. Right? He's the creator, the maintainer, and ultimately he's the destroyer. That's Lord Vishnu, right? Lord Vishnu. But as Krishna, he reciprocates. Lord Vishnu reciprocates also. But we see in Krishna's pastimes that there's a much more intimate set of relationships. Relationships within which Krishna puts himself fully at the mercy of his devotees. And he enjoys that. And he looks after them also. He reciprocates with those devotees who look after him. And so he enjoys that more, Prabhupada says here. The Lord enjoys more when someone takes him as his subordinate son who needs the protection of a father than he does when someone accepts him as the Supreme Lord. You know, he likes it when those when he's recognized as the Ishvaraha Parama Krishna. He likes that when people accept him as God, you know, the Supreme Personality. But he enjoys it more when those devotees want to look after him rather than him looking after them. He'll do that anyway. But he'll do that anyway. He's doing that all the time. But when the relationship deepens between the devotee and the Lord, and the devotee then wants to start looking after the Lord, then he appreciates that more. Because it's a more affectionate exchange. Otherwise, it's just a one-way street. You know, we come into the temple, we bow down, we put some money in a hundi, and then we ask for something. But you're the Supreme Person, please give me this. That's not bad, I suppose, but we want to be higher in our understanding. So the devotee comes in, he bows down, he puts some money in a hundi, and then he prays to Krishna, what can I do for you? Right? You've done so much for me, what can I do for you? That's actually a devotee. And so the Lord tells us what we should do. Right? Chant Hare Krishna. Study the philosophy. Worship the deity. Honour and distribute prasadam. Distribute. In this day and age, our way of reciprocating with Krishna is to engage in the pancharatrika vidhi, which is, you know, worshipping the deity in our regulated practices of devotional service, but then also to follow the Bhagavat vidhi. Prabhupada says like two train tracks that keep the train running. We need to follow our sadhana, but also preach. That's how we make spiritual advancement. By practicing and preaching. By action. By trying to please Krishna. That means being active. You know, our process is not so much sitting down and just chanting Hare Krishna and reading the books and trying to become a Paramahamsa. We're not that advanced, to be quite frank. That's why Prabhupada created all of these activities within the Krishna Consciousness Movement to engage us. You know, our yoga is a yoga of action. Getting out and doing things. Because if we think we can just sit down and chant Hare Krishna and we're going to become advanced, then we're fooling ourselves. Well, it can happen to the devotees. You know, they study the books, they study the Bhagavatam, they know so many things. But what happens is they get ahead of themselves. They start thinking, oh, now I'm really advanced. I know so much. But that knowledge has to be, has to manifest in proper behavior, proper dealings with others, and knowing one's own position. That means, you know, being humble. And preaching. And preaching in such a way so that we benefit others. That means, you know, getting out of our comfort zone and actually going out and preaching. That's where you'll get the realizations. Because knowledge is fine. That's good. Gyan is encouraged. But gyan needs to be put into vigyan, practice. And has to, you know, spiritual advancement has to be demonstrated. And the best way to demonstrate that is to go and preach. Not make out, now I'm a big Paramahamsa, I can tell everybody what to do. In fact, Prabhupada, you know, he criticised the devotees. Who do you think you are? Just distribute my books. Let the actual Paramahamsa do the preaching. So we have to be careful, you know, that we don't think that we're so advanced. You know, because I happen to have read up to the 7th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam or the 9th canto, or even have read all the books, for that matter. We should read the books, certainly, but just because we've read the books doesn't mean that we know everything. That's just, you know, just being able to repeat things that you read in a book. Anybody can do that, right? But practical application of that knowledge in day-to-day life where we make spiritual progress. And that means, okay, we should be concerned about our spiritual progress, but we should also be concerned about the spiritual progress of others. That's what reading the books makes us want to do. Not that, oh, no, I'm so advanced because I know so much. But how about humility? You know, if we want to be recognized for our erudition, that's a disease. I know so much, so therefore you should worship me. No. No, you should be humble. The process of learning means that you become humble, not the process of learning means you become proud now, and now everybody should recognize me. That's a disease. And so, you know, we can test. There are tests. There are tests on how we can determine who's advanced and who's not. And the advanced devotees get on with the job and get things done. And they're not looking for, they're not looking that people recognize them or that they get recognized. That they get a garland, that they get a big seat, or that people say, what a wonderful fellow you are. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, if you've got people praising you, they're not your friends, they're your enemies. Right? And you don't make a show of, you know, being a big, 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 big devotee. A big, big, big devotee is a little, little devotee, actually. Right? When Prabhupada was told, you're a big devotee, he said, I'm not a big devotee. Prabhupada was very humble. He was a big, big, big devotee, actually. But very, 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 very humble. Extremely humble. So we can tell. We can tell. You know, if somebody's prancing around the place like they own the joint, then we know that's not humility. Isn't it? Okay, temple president is allowed to go around and tell people what to do. That's okay. That's his humility. Huh? I don't know, even the temple president should be a humble servant of the rest of the devotees. That's the right attitude to have. We're a servant of the Vaishnavas. So we ask the Vaishnavas, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? How can I serve you? This is the mood. How can I serve you? Prabhu, right? You're my Prabhu. How do I serve you? How can I serve you? Not I'm the Prabhu when you do what I tell you to do. Huh? The mood is I'm the servant. Now when we approach the devotees like that, see here, Vasudeva is approaching Krishna, is, you know, I want to serve you. You're a little baby, I need to protect you. So Krishna likes that. There's the mood of service. And Krishna appears in that form just to elicit, just to pull that love and affection out of Vasudeva. Huh? And Krishna likes that. He's, you know, a good, we were discussing this the other day, a good disciple anticipates what is required for Krishna's pleasure and for the guru's pleasure, and for the devotee's pleasure. He anticipates. So he's always seeking out, how can I serve? Then Krishna's very happy with that mood of service. He reciprocates with that. Happily. So when he, you know, when he sees us preaching, that's good. But, you know, with the right mood. We're the servant, not only are we the servants of the devotees, we're also the servants of the non-devotees, actually. We're their servants. Not that they should serve us. You know, we're the devotees, so now you do what we tell you to do. Right? People won't like that. So therefore, you know, we feed people. We give them a lot, actually. Sometimes it might even appear as if we're being taken advantage of. Right? We're giving so much away, then people say, oh, you... But we understand that this is our service to the community. Now, we may certainly instruct them. Because this is a bit of a dilemma for the devotees. On the one hand, we're supposed to be humble and, you know, we don't feel that we're very advanced and so therefore not really qualified to speak. But we also have to speak because that's our service. Isn't it? But it has to be delivered in the right mood. With a proper understanding of the audience, with a proper understanding of the relationship. When Prabhupada was, he was giving an interview and he was talking about the Varnashram system and how the brahmanas were the head one of the interviewers was saying to Prabhupada how, you know, you must be the, you know, at the top. And Prabhupada said, no, the guru is at the bottom. He's the servant of everybody else. Right? The guru is the servant of all of the other, the brahmanas, the kshatriyas, the vaishyas, the sudras. So Prabhupada was always, you know, he was always humble. Not, oh yes, I'm in charge and so everybody should do what I tell them to do. No, it's the humility of the Vaishnavas that inspires people to do what they ask them to do. It's their humility. And learning, right? But vigyan, that means understanding how to take that knowledge, put it into practice so that everyone makes spiritual advancement. That's vigyan. Humbly presented. Very attractive. Like a magnet. Prabhupada was like a magnet and he just attracted the devotees. You know, you can see it. Prabhupada had such devotion that when he travelled around the world, then he just pulled all of the other devotees out. You know, they just came out. Just amazing. So we should be like that. We should be, if we're Prabhupada's followers, then we should be able to attract people naturally by a humble but yet, you know, firm presentation of Krishna consciousness. That's the preaching. And that humble, you know, knowledgeable character comes from the proper practice of devotional service. The proper practice of devotional service comes from the proper association. Very important. The proper association. Then in the proper association, if we know how to act within that, then we cultivate then the qualities of the devotees, the good qualities of the devotees. A good association is very important, and inspiration from the right people. Our inspiration is coming from devotees like Vasudeva. Strong desire to protect Krishna. And for us, a strong desire to serve, and that strong desire to serve will manifest in a strong desire to preach. Okay, I might finish here. Does anybody have any comments or questions? Jai Jagannath. He had his hand up first. I know I can always rely on you for a comment, Mahatma Ji. Say no. Prabhupada said, I have heard that Prabhupada said, I don't know whether the source was bona fide or not, that everyone's servant is nobody's servant. Right? So we have to choose who we're going to do service to. And we should stick to that. We have a parampara system. It's basically a siksha line, so we take instructions from certain people. So within our authority structure within ISKCON, we have certain devotees who are given responsibility to instruct others, to organize others, to manage. So, you know, and, you know, this could be a problem. We see it here, you know, some devotees, I'm a senior devotee, so therefore you have to do what I tell you to do. Right? So what's a senior devotee? Somebody who's been around longer? So therefore, if somebody's been around longer, then we all have to listen to that person? No. Prabhupada didn't set it up like that. That, you know, now I'm a senior devotee, you have to do what I tell you to do. No, he gave responsibility to some senior people to tell. But just because you've been around for a long time doesn't mean you can now start telling everybody what to do. Yet there are devotees who think, I'm a senior devotee, so everybody should do what I tell them to do. But that's not right. Right? So we have our, especially for the devotees in the temple, we have our rosters, and that's our designated duty, that's our service to Krishna. And if somebody else comes along and says, I'm a senior devotee, you should do what I tell you to do, you can say, sorry, Prabhu, but this is not what Krishna wants me to do at this particular point in time. And be confident in the fact that that's true. Right? Probably in your case, it's more you're compassionate to others and you see they need assistance and you want to help them. Which is okay. But we've still got to do what we've got to do. I know it happens to me too. People come up to my office and they knock on the door and they say, I want to see you. I said, okay, well, let's make an appointment. Well, I want to see you now. Hang on, I already got 20 things to do right now. Let's work out a time to meet. I have devotees, these days they don't, but in the past they get upset because they couldn't see me right away. What's wrong with you? You're supposed to be able to see me. So I could see you now, but I only got a couple of other things that I've decided that's what I'm going to do today. Right? So we have to be practical. You know, if you are just sitting around able to see anybody at any time, what are you doing? Huh? When Prabhupada saw devotees in Vrindavan, he would ask them, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? What's your service? Lest they think, oh, we'll go to Vrindavan and become advanced. Right? Prabhupada, go and do some service. Huh? Prabhupada encouraged devotees to go and do service. That's how we get advanced. Right? Not just sitting around waiting for, you know. Any devotee that I know, you know, they got heaps to do. Right? So therefore we need to be ordered and structured in how we communicate and organise things. So if somebody says, Prabhu, I need you to do this or do that, you'll say, I have to talk to my, you know, my in charge, and then I'll let you know if I can do it. Or you say, go and see Gopa Vrindesh. Huh? If you want me to do something for you, go and see my boss and he'll let you know whether I can do it or not. Right? Otherwise, what kind of an organisation are we going to have? All the senior devotees will be walking around telling everybody what to do. They won't be doing anything themselves, but they'll be telling everybody what to do. And, you know, there's a bit of prestige in being a person who tells people what to do. Isn't it? Bit of prestige, bit of power. Even in our little, you know, our little pond. The big fish and the little fish. If you don't do what I tell you what to do, I'm going to eat you. Prabhu. Vishal.
Yeah, Vishal. Thought you were impressed by the past. Past I didn't like it.
No.
Go and do something useful.
Yeah, go and do something useful. Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada.
Another, I heard Prabhupada in a conversation. There was a question when he was giving a conversation.
very humble. Common sense is not that common, apparently. Yep. There's a fire. No, I've got to go to Crossways. Flood. Yeah. Yeah, when you give a fool good advice, that's what happened, they get angry. Well, there's duty, right? There's capricious activity, and there's emergencies. So we need to be able to identify what is what. What we should actually be doing, what we shouldn't be doing, and then in an emergency you may do something that ordinarily you wouldn't do. But it's an emergency, so you've got to act. So that's, that, you know, I guess that requires some intelligence or some common sense. Yeah, good point. What time are we supposed to break our fast? Speaking of which, what time? Till when?
That's the end of it.
That was the end of it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, not so much for that. 6:12. Oh no, 9:34. I got plenty of time. Yep, good. Any other comments, Ivan?
So speaking about preaching to general public.
Yep.
Usually, they perceive us in terms of some material achievements, which not always devotees always have.
Yeah. Chant Hare Krishna. Go out and do Sankirtan.
We are expected to preach, but at the same time, obviously, like, there might be examples, for example, some devotees who, maybe divorced, would preach to, you know, married couples how to live or how to,
yeah,
you know, maintain relationships.
Yep.
Like that.
Yeah, be mindful of your circumstance. But see, a devotee knows their own position and their own level of advancement. So, you know, if they can't keep their marriage together, they shouldn't be instructing others about marriage. Right? That's obvious. It's like, duh. Right? Because you've got to practice what you preach. Right? You've got to be able to walk the talk. So, you know, yeah, there are some things that we have to be practical about. But really, you know, what's our preaching? We go out on book distribution. We go out on Harinam. We distribute prasadam. You know, these are the way that we affect people. And we set a good example. We rise early in the morning, we chant Hare Krishna, we worship the deity, we worship Srila Prabhupada, we offer prasadam, we honor prasadam, and we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, and as a result of those activities, we should become, you know, peaceful and learned. We value devotees by their learning, by their demeanor, by their service, you know, the activities that they perform. When we see a devotee making advancement, then we're inspired by that. And so others are also. So we set an example in our daily lives. And that inspires people. A devotee is actually very learned, you know, a kavi, right? This is one of the 26 qualities of a devotee. So when it comes to, you know, when it comes to our dealings with others, we were talking to Martin Foley and a couple of other fellows from the Labour Party. And one of them was an Indian, and he was asking the question, you know, how come there's all these different forms of God? It's confusing, right? And then I used that example of the actor playing on the stage. And he said to me, he said, wow, that's a really simple way of understanding it. You explained it perfectly, right? Not my example, it's Prabhupada's example, or it's an example from the Shastra. But if we, you know, we actually are quite learned when it comes to the science of self-realization. So when people associate with us, even when we're just a rank and file, you know, beginner, we still know, you know, the head of the, you know, as I said, the head of the Archbishop of England is not... He doesn't think that God exists, right? But, you know, we have a very clear understanding. If we understand our philosophy, especially if you hear from Prabhupada regularly, you know, Prabhupada explains quite deep and rather complex concepts to people in a very succinct way. So if we're able to do that, chant Hare Krishna, become a satisfied devotee, preach and you know, just talk to people nicely, it will have an effect and will attract people. Right? People will naturally attract. We don't have to do any magic. But Prabhupada said, I didn't do any magic. Or if I did any magic, I attracted people to become devotees. But that's all we have to do too. Go out and chant. You know, just a couple of comments while I'm at it. What you reminded me. When we're going on Harinam, the emphasis should be on chanting and hearing the Maha Mantra. We don't need any more instruments than a mridanga and kartal. Prabhupada said, that's Sankirtan. So my request is get rid of these stupid djembes. Right? We had two djembes on Sankirtan on Friday night. You couldn't hear. There's only a dozen devotees, wasn't it? Who was there? You were there? How many people were there, Jai Jagannath? A dozen, 15, you know, two djembes. I told the djembe wallahs, leave them at home, please. As soon as you bang one of those drums, boom, then you can't hear anything. And you can't hear the mridanga. The mridanga, if it's played nicely, has a lot more timber, you know, T-I-M-B-R-E. You know what timber means? Tone. And subtlety to it. So it makes you want to jump up and down. Especially when, you know, when the mridanga player goes, whoop, whoop, and you want to go, whoop, whoop. It gets you going. Whereas, you know, the djembe is, boom, 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 looks like. Right? The girls are next. So anyway, you know, we want to be able to hear the mantra. We want to be able to chant the mantra. With the djembe, you can't hear anything. We don't even need the harmonium. Not the harmonium, the accordion. To play the accordion, you really need to be an expert. There's the keys here. You need to be able to play the chords. Plus there's all those little black buttons on the side. You see the black buttons? That's the key in which you happen to be playing, and you play the bass line. So, you know, to play the accordion prop, and I mentioned this to, Keshav Acharya. You know, if you're going to take the accordion out, you've got to be able to play it, otherwise not just one note, you know, it's just, get rid of it. All that hassle trying to play the thing, and you're missing out on hearing the mantra. So we just don't need those things. And, this is a humble request to the ladies. I think our dancing, you know, is going over the top. Twirling and this and that and the other thing. You know, it's too contrived. We should be... Our dancing can be, you know, I guess a little bit syncopated, coordinated, but, you know, I saw some pretty... enthusiasm, I appreciate that. But I just think, you know, what's happening is the dancing becomes the all, you know, everything. And then the Mahamantra gets put into the background. So we want to bring the Mahamantra out into the foreground. We don't break it up, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. We don't do that. We chant the full mantra. Prabhupada didn't break the mantra up. Huh? And, you know, we should, a good kirtan leader sticks to the tune. Not, you know, two mantras this, another mantra, you know, bless her heart. She was, you know, probably the first time she led it, you know, but it was, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. I couldn't chant that fast. What does we could even be able to meditate on it? I'm thinking, give me a break. I want to hear the mantra. I want to be able to meditate on it. Then, you know, if we're in the Sankirtan party, all hearing the leader and responding nicely, we'll automatically dance. There's no doubt about that. You know, we don't have to keep, you know, we don't have to start dancing, you know, right from the word go, you know, it's contrived. In my mind, we don't need to do that. We will automatically, and this is on this point of preaching, Ivan, we will automatically attract people by the pure chanting of Hare Krishna. By playing instruments nicely so that they support the kirtan, but the kirtan is always about the mantra. It's always about the Maha Mantra. It's not about, you know, who's jumping up and down the highest or in the most, you know, which, you know, we've got all the girls and they're all doing the same thing. It's kind of like, whoa. It looks like the Hare Krishna robots, right? At least in my mind. It's too contrived. And does it attract people? I don't know. I don't see more people coming to the temple because we do twirlies on Sankirtan. Right? Anybody notice more people coming to the temple because we're doing twirlies on Sankirtan? I don't think so. But okay, you know, the Swami step, that Prabhupada encouraged that. But, you know, Cirque du Soleil, I don't know about that. What do you reckon? Too heavy? Yeah, I know. And it will dance. You know, dancing will come. I know. You start off slow, but once you become absorbed in the kirtan, anything can happen. That's fine. Because it's spontaneous. But, you know... You ain't going to catch me doing that stuff. I'm an individual. I'm not going to be robotized, lobotomized. If I'm going to dance, I'll dance the way I feel like. Not. So I don't know. I guess it's arguable. There are some circumstances where that kind of dancing is appropriate. I do acknowledge. Yeah, but even then, I thought Tatiana was going to take off on Friday night. I thought, ooh, I would like to meet her in a dark alley. She'd finish me off quickly, full of energy, which is good. No, nothing wrong with that. But, it's funny, we've now got how ISKCON changes, right? We've now got the Brahmacharinis dancing like the Brahmacharis used to do in the old days. Isn't it? Am I right? Yeah. We used to do that. Now we've got the girls at the front, we've got the girls. And I'm thinking, well, that's what we used to do. But anyway. Yeah, and what I've noticed is when the Sankirtan party is focused on the mantra, that's when people really notice. It's powerful. It is extremely powerful. More powerful than just jumping up and down. Because, then Krishna's actually present in the form of the holy name when the devotees are meditating. Because I couldn't hear the devotees chanting on Friday night. I could hear the djembes and the kartals and only one person chanting. That was the person who was leading. But I couldn't hear anybody else. And I'm thinking, what's going on here? Actually, I got a bit annoyed. I don't know if you noticed. And, well, it's overflowing now. Anyway. I'll try to get out on the Harinam party more often, and then I'll be telling you what to do. Look, we all had Korma telling us what to do, right? Balaram and Korma used to tell us what to do. Double line, don't do this, don't do that, stand in line, don't get out, don't space out, right? And we have to do that, otherwise we look like a raggle-taggle band of gypsies. Seriously. We just look like a bunch of no-hopers wandering around the place. You're all jumping up and down. Hang on a second. I don't think jumping up and down really affects people unless it's inspired by the Maha Mantra. So Maha Mantra first, jumping up and down second, or third, or fourth, or fifth. Because right, it's got to be deep absorption in the sound of the holy name. When we first used to go out on Harinam, there was only five of us or six of us. So that, often Ushapati or Korma would say, okay, before we go out, we're just going to listen to the sound of the mantra. Don't worry about anybody else or whatever, because there's only five of us. And in those days, certainly in the early 70s, later 70s wasn't so often, but you'd get attacked by people, a bunch of sailors walking down the street. They decide, oh, let's punch up the Hare Krishnas, right? So you have to be focused, right? And the ring of confidence for the Sankirtan party is the holy name, right? Absorption in the holy name, that protects us. Karmis won't touch you if you're absorbed in the Maha Mantra. They can't. Or they might, big demons might from time to time. Right? But then you just punch them back. Right? Or run. I prefer the alternative. I wasn't great at punch-ups. Anyway, I just thought I'd offer that humble offering of appreciation for the Sankirtan party. And, I think we got to get to the basics. The basics is the Maha Mantra. And, Prabhupada did say, Kartal Mridanga Bas. It's all that's required. It's 9:20. Yeah. Who's feeling hungry? Yep, okay. Prasadam upstairs? Yep, okay. There's a party on. We all have to start taking prasadam by 9:34. Okay. All right. Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Harinam Sankirtana ki jai, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jai.